Nashville, Tennessee. Outside of Cantrell's. Good show last night. Slept at a truck stop. There was a real good restroom at the place. Every urinal had an ashtray. That's class. No butts in the bowl. I can see some guy in there now. Cock in one hand, cigar in the other, staring into space. Went to a used record and bookstore. Picked up a copy of Tropic of Capricorn by Henry Miller. I already have a copy, but it's really torn up. I gave my copy to Brian from the sound company. There are people standing all around me, asking me questions. I feel like saying, I know it looks like I'm busy, but I'm not, really. But I don't say that. I answer the questions like a good guy. I watched a little boy play alone on the front porch of his house that faces the front of the club. The way the house looked and the way the boy was dressed, you would have thought it was a scene from Tom Sawyer. The neon sign on the building next to the house fucked that up, though. He kept picking up rocks and throwing them up at the roof. Finally, a hornet's nest fell to the ground. The boy leaped up on it and stomped it flat. After he destroyed it, he kicked the remains into the street. That is a selection from a book we've read from before, Get in the Van by Henry Rollins, On the Road with Black Flag, his tour diaries. And I'm glad I have a copy of this. It's out of print now. And I think this might be, maybe we'll have more selections from that in the future for what I think might be a series that we're kind of inaugurating with this very episode.
Yes. Yes, it is. This is the Kings of Punk podcast. If you are unfamiliar or this is your first episode stumbling upon it, this is a podcast where me and my fellow co-hosts talk and discuss punk and all its variations. And not just punk, we're talking hardcore, ska,
rap metal,
oi, noisecore, whatever might be tangentially related.
Reggaeton.
And we really kind of, I think, do our best job to kind of look at punk and music as a huge spectrum and see how it's affected a lot of things over the years, over the 40 or 50, I guess coming up on 50 years.
Yeah, crazy to think about.
I am Tyler Hammer, and with me,
I'm Gary U.S. Bombs.
Jake Razor here.
Oh, and the rain is picking up.
The rain is here,
it's
too,
getting
it
all
looks
fucked
like.
Up outside again. Great.
Yeah,
can wait for the sun to come back out, and it's going to feel horrible.
It nonstop, just like there is now no longer a little bit of a rain, like a drizzle. It kind of does sometimes. It just feels like on Friday, I think it would like downpoured like a motherfucker for like 10 minutes.
Oh yeah, or that was like
that was Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate the weather. Just in general. I don't care what it is. I just want, my ideal weather is the kind where I don't notice it.
Right, so overcast.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is pretty much what it is around here, I'd say, majority of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this episode, we're going to be talking about a little city called Nashville. And the series, I don't know how far, I can't remember what you said exactly, but because I'm such a great podcast co-host, can be looking at various cities and see where they fall within the punk rock history.
Yeah, we like learning about different places. I think I speak for all of us when I say that. We've all traveled a little bit. You guys have been on tour. I used to travel for work. I've done some limited touring too, not nearly as much as you guys. And I mean, I don't know how we're going to pick cities in the future, but this one, it'll probably be the same way. Yeah. We picked this one. This is a place that we all kind of agreed sucked to varying extents of how strongly we felt about it.
Well, what was the catalyst? Like, it was Gray from Demo List and was talking about how much this place sucked, right?
Yeah. He went on a great tirade about how, well, it was because he had listened to on the show this newer band from there called Gun, who are very good.
Very good.
And he was like, yeah, I can't believe this is good. That's like my least favorite city I've ever been to. I don't know if he said that, but he said it was up there. So, and coming from a gentleman from Indiana, that means a lot. That means something.
Yeah, I can't imagine living. I think living in Indiana, specifically like a Fort Wayne, is probably similar to living in like Western New York.
I could totally imagine living in Fort Wayne. There's no reason for me to move to Fort Wayne, but that's the kind of place I could imagine living in.
That's a lateral move.
Yes.
Yeah, not up nor down.
So, I mean, the better thing is that I guess it's closer to Chicago. See, the thing is, we don't really have, like, a major city near us.
Well, we do. Toronto.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Toronto. Yeah, but That's crossing. That's going to another fucking country.
The land down above us. Yeah.
That's the problem is, like, there's all these tours that, like, it's like, well, we won't play Western New York. We'll just play Toronto. It's like,
we'll just skip.
And it's like, if I lived in Buffalo, I think it would be less of an issue. But it's like, I have to drive an hour plus. Then hopefully nothing fucked up happens. I've never actually went to Toronto for a show, but.
Getting over the border isn't that bad. I think the bigger issue in terms of living your life as a person is, I could be wrong. I think if you, I don't think you can really get a job there if you're not a Canadian citizen. Maybe you can, but like you wouldn't. And it's, I know it is tricky to get citizenship there.
I feel like the best you could probably do, I mean, as far as that concerned, is probably like under the table work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know work exactly how it works, but they have a lot of laws there. And I know that if you want to become a Canadian citizen, you have to like prove that you're going to be really great for Canada. So it's you're right. It's even though that is a major city near us, and I think we could take more advantage of that in terms of going to shows and stuff. But in terms of opportunities for people, not as good as like not really comparable to Indiana and Chicago. I don't think.
Yeah, because like we have Cleveland and Pittsburgh near us. That's pretty cool.
I wouldn't really call those like they're not like
but they're not
major cities.
They're not like New York City.
No.
And
no,
New York City is, we've talked about this before, New York City from Rochester, for those that don't know, is about 6 hours southeast, pretty much. You have to go very far east, pretty much 3 hours east and 3 hours south.
Basically drive across the whole state.
It's just like 6 hours to me, at least, is just a little bit too far to just pop over on a weekend.
No, you can pop over to Philly on the weekend.
Totally.
Know why you'd want to. No, I'm kidding. I there's people there I love very much, and I'm gonna go there to visit them, but it's
the place does kind of stink too.
There's a lot of cool stuff there, but
they got a lot of full trash cans there. I don't know why they gotta empty those.
That's true. That's very true.
Well, yeah, no one's eating them. Come on.
But it is more of a major city than here, as is Pittsburgh and Cleveland. But again, yeah, it's not New York or Toronto,
even
or
Buffalo,
Chicago.
Buffalo is like more of like a real city than Rochester.
Yes.
Well, I was saying to Kia, my partner, that like if you're in the city of Rochester, if you're in the city during like when it's like right now, when it's like the weather's nice, things are green, like the city of Rochester is more suburban in a way manifested than like a New York City or like a Philly.
Yeah, it's not that dense.
It's not that dense. Like, our downtown is very small compared to, like, even a Buffalo.
Our downtown is, like, it feels like it's, like, four blocks.
Yeah. It's also empty.
It's also pretty empty. So, compared to a lot of places, like, if it's in the summer, the city is not, like, should not be considered scary or anything like that, because it looks pretty nice.
Winter, though.
That's what I said. I was like, winter is when it becomes, like, dirty.
Yes, yeah.
Versus,
no,
like,
true.
The suburbs. Where it's like, oh, it's so quaint. And this isn't a diss because I love Rochester. I don't know. Like, I like this place. But it is funny how, like, the differences in those two seasons are pretty varied.
Because we only get two seasons here.
We really
kind
of only get two
seasons. We get winter and summer.
I mean, the end of the winter is the worst because the snow starts melting and there's just garbage and dirt and fucking used needles
like
and shit everywhere. Yeah.
Good old gunk everywhere. I had a good weekend, though. We went to the park, and me and my partner, we ate various cheeses and fruits and meats.
That sounds good. Sounds good.
That was great. And I think is that something you would do in Nashville? I don't know.
You might.
Eat some good food
so
there.
So we'll lead with the good thing. So I was there once, maybe twice for work, and I liked it, but I also spent minimal time in the fucking Music Row area where people go. I went to a park where they have a replica Parthenon, and it was a nice little park. I don't know why there's a replica.
That's cool.
I guess it's because if it's, you know, people called it the Athens of the South or West, as we'll get into, but it's a real replica Parthenon. It's big. It's the size of the one in Greece, and the park was nice enough, and I liked that.
I feel like we played, like, when me and Tyler played in Nashville, I swear to God, we were, like, right near that.
Really? I wish we went to it.
Yeah, there's actually one more thing I want to look up. but you guys can continue.
We will. Me and Tim played there with our band Hallucination Realized on tour with Tomb Warden in
2019.
July, probably around this time, or maybe like a week prior to this.
Yeah,
like
it
legitimately,
was,
it was the near the end of the tour,
actually,
the back half for sure. We played Memphis the day prior, which we played that with our friends in Knoll, one of their earliest shows when they were still a young band, had a different lineup. They were that day was incredible in Memphis.
Yeah, because it was like a Monday night, and like we made like a killing.
We made
made a ton of money.
Ton of money. Everyone was stoked on us. I remember some kids like, this is my first time moshing with you guys. It's like, oh,
that's
cool.
Memphis was, that was a cool, there's a city I can get into.
We ate some delicious barbecue. We went to Makeda's Cookies after.
Oh, the place where, what's his name?
King
Young,
Bond, or
Young Dolph.
Young Dolph was
got
murdered.
Yeah.
Whoa.
RIP. RIP Young Dolph. And, we had a great, great day. Paul got attacked by bees, I remember, because there was, like, bees near our hotel.
That's scary. I'm kind of afraid of bees.
Oh, I remember our hotel was like right on the Mississippi River.
Yeah. It was
crazy.
That's
Memphis,
cool.
So great. Nashville the next day, though.
You guys had a bad time.
Well, okay. So we were going down there, and I'm a fan of the Doughboys podcast where they review chains.
We're talking
chains.
Nashville chicken.
Nashville chicken. It's like, all right, guys, I've heard of Nashville chicken.
I've heard of it. I've had Nashville style chicken around here that I liked.
Now,
there's a restaurant called Nashville Hot Chicken around here that is very good.
Where is that?
It's in Victor. It's on 96.
Oh, I might have to try. I might have to try that.
See, that could compared to what we got in Nashville. Oof.
So, I think they did a whole episode or series. Maybe the Doughboys will go on tour, hit some locations a few days in a row.
Some regional stuff.
Some regional stuff. Your Waffle Houses. Your Maddie B's, which is, I believe, a hot Nashville hot chicken.
That's like the, I think that's like the main chain.
Yeah, the main chain there. So
we didn't go to there, though.
Well, we're like, we're betting that we need the legit place.
We don't need a chain.
So we go to Bolton's.
Was it well reviewed? Did you do your homework?
And that's
on
like
this?
It was one of those things where it's like, this is legit. This is like
yeah.
Tourists go to Maddie B or Hattie B's.
Sure, yeah.
Real people go to Bolton's, and it's like, as we are like connoisseurs of delicious food and local things.
Probably where I would go, yeah.
Of course we would go there. Like if you said to someone going to Rochester what kind of garbage plate you would get, I never tell
you're
anyone
not gonna
to
be
go
Steve,
to.
Steve B's or whatever.
Stevie T's or whatever it is.
Or Nick Tahoe's. Nick Tahoe's, yeah, none of that.
No. But
honestly, I probably would tell them to go there.
Just be like, yeah, you'll never want to eat one of these again.
Yeah, you should go there.
Yeah,
go to Mark. Go to Mark's.
One at 2 p.m.
Yeah, go to Mark's Texas Hots at 3 a.m. and get one.
Yeah, that's what I would tell them to do.
So we get the chicken, and we're like, it's pretty. And you know, it's obviously it's called hot
it's
chicken.
Like, boy, there's a lot of cayenne pepper on this thing.
So did they give you options for how hot you
it's
wanted
like,
it?
Yeah.
And I think we, like,
well,
Oliver, our driver, got, I think he did two orders. One, they were like, well, we got to get the hottest. Got to see how that is. But also probably get like either the second hottest or the third hottest. I believe I got medium, which is like the third hottest.
It's yeah, I remember middle. I got medium, and I could not. I think I took like two bites, and I was
Dude,
like, fuck this.
It was like devastatingly hot.
Is that spicy? What kind of spice?
It was cayenne. Like,
was
dude, they straight
like,
up emptied like a whole thing of cayenne pepper
dude,
on the chicken.
It was legit like that. It was like the chicken wasn't very good. Well, it didn't taste good.
So where is the pepper? Is that in the breading then?
I think so.
It was like coating the chicken.
Coating the chicken.
So if you were to peel off the breading and just eat the meat, would that be spicy? Or
it
no?
probably would
I'm
still be spicy because
it.
Of how. But I don't know how it's cooked necessarily.
Maybe not as bad though.
Usually, because I've had the Nashville chicken from KFC. And it usually is done in some sort of oil. I don't know how much oil was done on this. Usually it's like an oil. Usually it's like used a hot oil. Like they do in some like Asian dishes.
Where you fry it in like hot oil?
Where you use like a hot oil to make like a sauce.
Oh, to make a sauce. Okay.
And
oh, you're right.
And
right.
I don't think it was like that with this place.
No, it seemed like, I think it was like a dry rub on the chicken.
And it was like, we were all just like.
Completely devastated. Like Connor, he got like tunnel vision from like the chicken. He was
like
fucked up.
Psychedelic like experience.
It sounds kind of good.
No,
it
was not.
Dude,
it was not good
at all. Yeah, it was. I mean, I didn't even get chicken. I got like didn't somebody get like fish or something?
Yeah.
and like the, even that was like too much.
Did it come with another sauce to like cut the spice,
no.
like blue cheese
I
or something?
I don't know. Maybe it did.
It should. You're
remember.
Supposed to have like blue cheese with it.
I think, I mean, what do we, there's like maybe like a side of coleslaw that came with it,
something.
I think.
There was something. It was just like, I just remember just being like crying and like
it was
everything.
That
hurt.
Bad.
Dude,
I'll have
it was
to try
bad.
It. I'm wondering if they fucked up with you guys.
We were all pissed.
Because if you guys all ordered the spicy, like at the place I mentioned in Victor, you order, like, spice based on 1 through 11.
Yeah.
And, like, you know not to get the 11. You get, like, I've gotten an 8, and it was very spicy, but it was good. It was, like, manageable and good. But it sounds like you guys didn't all order the spiciest option.
No. I got the meat, and I was like, I like spicy food. Right. I like a good heat, especially if it tastes good. This was, like, didn't taste good, was way hotter than I thought it was. And I think just the vehicle of heat was like just poor.
Well, maybe they could tell that we were Yankees.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I'm thinking. Maybe, I don't know.
I mean, even though I don't think Tomb Warden are really, they're like mid-Atlantic, so
yeah.
I don't think they would.
They're
count.
The South, Maryland,
yeah.
or Virginia,
Washington D.C. Yeah,
Washington D.C., Virginia. Like that's the South.
But us West, you know, up north, they're like they wanted. They were like,
you should eat corn. And it's like I do like corn.
It's weird. I got food in Nashville, and it was – I didn't get that, though. I got some other barbecue. It was nondescript, I think. I remembered the one other thing I really liked there. Next to the Parthenon Park, there is a dive bar called Springwater, and it's very cool. They have neon signs, and half it has a dirt floor. It's like a great classic dive bar. I enjoyed that. Then I tried to go to the area you're supposed to go to, downtown, with all the fucking country bars, and I had a miserable time because parking's impossible, and yep. – For me, I get why people would love it, some people, but not for me. Like, it's just you walk down the street and, like, every bar is an overpriced bar with a country band playing. And it's like, how many of these do I need in my life, really? Like, even if I was into country music, like, let's say it was all punk bands, I guess they would be cool. But how many of them are going to be great punk bands? And, like, how many am I going to see in one night? Not that many.
Yeah, if you have, like, a built-in audience, like, can it be that good? Like... Remember recently when Jordan Peterson was talking about going to a country bar? He was in Nashville.
It sounds really funny.
I went to Nashville and it was amazing.
Oh, I was in Nashville.
He liked it?
It was amazing. It was an amazing experience. It was amazing. I can't do his...
I mean, it is...
He sounds like Kermit. So.
It is exceptional. There's nowhere else I've ever been or probably ever will be that's like that. And that's kind of weird. And maybe we'll talk about that more later. But it's not... Of all the like expensive big cities I could go to, and all the experiences I could have there, not wouldn't be my pick.
You definitely, I think you hit the nail. Those are definitely two of my biggest issues too. Like the traffic, horrible, absolutely fucking horrible there. And yeah, we went to a bar after the show we played, and I swear to God, like they did not have like a beer that was like under $12.
That's insane.
Wow.
No, yeah, I was like,
Oh yeah, because you guys went separate. Now,
yeah,
remember,
me and
I got
Connor, we were like, what the fuck is this?
No,
shit?
The country bar I went to was like that too. That Springwater place has the like cheap PBRs, or at least they did. But that's a dive bar that's like away from downtown.
But.
That's probably the kind of place you want to hit up if you're in Nashville.
Place I want to hit up like anywhere if I'm trying to get drunk, probably. Yeah. I'm not trying to go downtown.
But our show wasn't very good either. It wasn't poorly attended.
It was a Tuesday, to be fair.
Yeah. But we got to play with Thetan again, and they're a really sick, like PV kind of related band, bass and drum band. So
was it only a 3-band show?
It was 4. No, it was like death metal band or something like that too.
Can't even remember.
But when it comes to punk and hardcore from Nashville, that's probably not the first city you think of.
No,
but
wasn't when I thought of it all.
Like every little city in this great United States, there usually is some inkling of that exists.
You can find something pretty much anywhere, which I tried to do back in the day with. When I was first learning about hardcore, was like, especially with countries, every country, if there was one band from there, I wanted to hear their unlistenable demo tape. But this is another reason I want to do this. This is one where I couldn't think of one off the top of my head, punk bands from there.
So we're going to try and change that for you.
We'll get into that momentarily. I also dug a bit into the background of the city because I was intrigued by the country music thing because I thought for years that was just a meme. and that it was just like a tourist thing. I learned later, no, if you want to be a country music songwriter for your career, which is a real career that you can pursue, you like have to move there. Just like if you want to get into any kind of normal show business, you have to go to New York City or LA or Chicago. Bizarre. Only for country music, you have to go there. Or if you're a musician, singer, whatever, fucking guitar slinger and bullshit you do. And they have, like, I guess, offices of people who write the music for those people to sing. And that is, like, a big industry there, although not the only one. There's other industries in that city. It's very, economically, it's a prosperous fucking place. I would assume very expensive to live in. Also, you know, I mentioned people calling it the Athens of the South. It used to be the Athens of the West when the country was smaller. There's like a bunch of schools around there. So this is a hub of activity, and not all of it, but much of it is centered around fucking country music, which is a huge industry that I never think about because why would I?
Yeah, I don't think any of us are very big country like heads.
Right. Why would you want to get your fingers dirty, like dipping into that kind of shit?
Like I said, the one guilty pleasure I have, I like that Wagon Wheel song, which Tim has since told me is performed by Hootie of the band The Blowfish, which I didn't even know.
Yeah.
But
I think Nashville's kind of cool too, to a degree, in that like it is kind of like in the middle of like where it is. It's on like literally like the border of like the top, so it's kind of like in between.
It's near like Kentucky, right?
So that, yes, that is another. Yeah. There's one of the reasons it attracted a lot of musicians. If you first saw yourself as being someone who had to go on tour a lot as playing in honky tonks, it made sense to be there.
Yeah.
Getting into the history a little bit, another. I'll go back a little bit and we'll circle back to where we are now. So this place started, from what I could gather, I did some research, got some info from, there was like a lecture that the county historian gave. First people to settle there, first white people, were French Canadian fur trappers. It's incredible how those guys got around because they killed too many fucking beavers in Canada. So they settled there, presumably started pushing some Indians out a little bit after that when the regular, not French Canadian white people came in. It was obviously a Confederate state. Obviously, a big political thing there is that Andrew Jackson, legendary psychopath and president, was from there. I saw one of his.
Oh, he was actually from Nashville.
I know he had a plantation and like a mansion there. So you can go visit it. Oh, wow. It's like near Nashville.
They haven't knocked that down yet.
Ooh. No, they're never gonna knock it down. People are very proud of him there, I think. But interesting thing, you know, throughout Tennessee, he was like a largely a popular politician, but in Nashville specifically, that was like kind of a stronghold of anti-Jackson sentiment from the Whig Party, which you guys probably remember from high school.
Yeah,
always Whig mayors in that city. And the Whig sort of philosophy was, or their, a lot of their ideas were, they were in favor, to put it just in broadest terms, obviously very different times, talking about like the 1800s here, 19th century. They were big advocates for the idea that the government should do things to help business, like basic infrastructure. You know, we need bridges, we need roads, we need shit to do business. And this was a commercial hub, largely due to the geography, so there were a lot of people there who were in favor of that. Whereas Andrew Jackson was in favor of, no, we shouldn't even have a central bank, and the important thing for the government to do is to kill Indians so that we can send these fucking yahoos west and they won't bother us anymore. Mm-hmm. As a result of what the federal government did do to help business and try to make something resembling a society, Nashville was able to become a, you know, prosperous place with lots of colleges. And now dipshit yahoos can go there and make songs about how actually that was bad and they need to get rid of the government or whatever they're singing about.
They can live there and talk about how the small town they live in is like actually really dope.
Even though it's like, right, like even though like everybody like hates each other and, you know.
Yeah, they can talk about the place they understandably fled to go to this rich big city.
Fuck each other's wives and shit.
But another big music thing is they did have the Grand Ole Opry. It's a radio show that's still on where country musicians play live and shit. I guess from what I could gather, they had like this huge radio antenna back when everybody listened to the radio, like big enough that in neighboring states you could hear this show. And that was originally built by a life insurance company because they needed a radio station to advertise their life insurance. And that was like an integrated part of the show. This is very Southern. This is like, these are the people who kind of, I'm not trying to slander this life insurance company. I don't know much about them, but in terms of the North-South conflict and to some extent, the like Whig versus Jacksonian Democrat conflict, like these were the kind of motherfuckers who like wanted the Confederacy, were people who were like local, the landed gentry. They were local barons. They were people who were like, no, we don't need the government to build infrastructure. Yeah, like, I've got everything I need. And
I need to scam these people.
I can take care of the people that I give a shit about and fuck everybody else. Like, no, I don't need the government. Like, I can build a giant antenna myself, which I guess they did. But yeah. It was later rebuilt by some other organization or something. But that was a big part of the music thing, too. Because, you know, if you're some fucking... you know, hee-haw, hayseed guy. I'm going to try to get all the bad words for people from a different place than me in here. But, and you hear it on the radio, you're like, oh, well, they're coming out of Nashville. I'm going to take my story songs over there, try to make some money. And, yeah, I like old country music, by the way. I'm not trying to diss all country music. A lot of it was great. But
even if they are all a bunch of goat fuckers, you know, I mean.
I don't know if they goat so much. Yeah.
How about this? Going from landed gentry to Montgomery gentry.
It is crazy that his name was Gentry.
That makes sense. That's just how it is. It's like, oh, Smith, because you're like a blacksmith.
It's two
or
guys.
Something like that.
I know it's two guys. One of them was named Montgomery and the other was named Gentry, right?
Yep.
And then he. Crazy. Gentry died into a helicopter accident.
To the turbines of a helicopter.
That helicopter didn't Gentry hit the ground.
Gentry.
We are not beating the English allegations
today.
No, I mean, I just thought it was, you know, I thought it was kind of funny.
What am I, back in Toronto? No, I'm kidding. That one's going to get us in trouble, but it is a little like that.
I mean, well, I wasn't trying to, you know, I mean, it's a
no,
punk.
No, you weren't trying to do that.
It's just a punk rock thing. That's how.
Yo, this is punk rock, baby. You know, we kind of walk on the wild side on this podcast a little bit.
Yeah, all the punk rock are talking like this.
Why do they talk like that?
My fate, this guy who only learns about like sick heavy, and he thinks that like that's just how punk rock people talk.
Wait a minute, yeah, like what Asian people?
Brocades.
What?
That's so weird. They change their L's to R's for some reason. That's weird.
It's a subcultural dialect.
Okay.
That's what we were doing.
Okay, we got that out of our system.
Okay. Whew. All right. In terms of punk rock, though. We actually have found some early punk rock records.
Yes, but it was not easy. I was shocked when we decided to do this. I figured, you know, there would be like one thing. I figured they'd have like some hardcore band I forgot about. I figured they would have like Killed by Death punk, like obscure 77 singles where I'd look and I'd be like, oh, I remember that fucking gnarly song.
Yeah.
Nope.
I feel like there'd be a sick Rate Your Music list that we could easily just find everything
no,
we needed
no.
there.
I even went, I was curious about like earlier, like what was originally called punk music, like the Nuggets 60s garage stuff. I'm sure there's something from Nashville. I found a couple real obscure things, but I looked on the original Nuggets comp. I clicked on every band name to try and see. No, you got actually a lot of Massachusetts representation. You got California, fucking Minnesota, a couple other weird places.
Not too much Tennessee. Down south stuff.
There was a couple. I want to say there was like a Louisiana band on there, but like, no, nothing from here. I bet there, and it, by all means, send them to us because I like this kind of stuff. I bet there is like some gnarly like 60s garage site kind of stuff from Nashville. Maybe I'm fucking wrong. Maybe I'm just saying that because of Texas. I don't know, but
maybe it was all, you know, because think about it, like Nashville, that's like the establishment,
right?
Like, you know, there's probably, I can't imagine. Well, you know, I would think that people would want to go against the grain, but
I would think so. But you know what? Maybe you do,
just in that time period,
but I mean,
tough to say.
Like I said, with how prolific like country music was in that region, like that is more than likely the stuff you're getting raised on, and just far more embroiled into the culture in a local sense than anywhere else, like than like New York fucking
or
City
anything
or even
else.
Rochester.
I mean,
or
I could
Chicago.
Imagine. You know, like, think about it. Like, back in Nashville in the 60s, like, you know, you listen to, like, the Beatles. Everybody down there is probably like, what are you, some kind of, you know, homophobic slur or something? Yeah. Or,
well, at least the later Beatles, the early stuff, they would have been like, you know, they got some good tunes, I gotta say, but
they
gotta
put some cowboy hats and some boots on or something, though.
Yeah, which thankfully is one thing the Beatles didn't do. The Rolling Stones did, and they did a good job of it, I gotta say. But
I do like some of their
dude,
their
they're
country
like country influenced stuff.
Yeah,
rules.
The Stones, they got their spurs all spurred
sticky
up
fingers
and
stuff. No, you know what the issue might have been? Both, I know from reading a little bit, this was an issue in the like 70s, 80s punk era, but even in the 60s, if you were trying to do your like Amboy Dukes kind of band, trying to get booked at those clubs, like what, where are you going to play?
Yeah.
And getting studio time. This is before home recording really took off. Like, I don't know, those studios were probably expensive. I would imagine like country labels were paying to put people up in them more than anything else.
Yeah, that's like, this.
Nobody's going to book you to do your little fucking Count Five bit in that city.
I think a thing that fundamentally went, we talk about like history of punk and really just music in general. People nowadays, younger people don't really fundamentally understand is that like you can't just record. You can't just record. You couldn't just record back then. Even like shitty tapes were expensive to do.
Right.
You know, like,
well, they didn't even, they had like what, like 8 tracks and shit, right?
Yeah. I mean, like the 2-inch tape thing, like that's where like a lot of bands would record on before digital became a thing. You legitimately had to go to, like, a studio for the most part. Like, you had to go to a functioning studio.
Yeah.
You needed, like, another thing that we talked about, like, last episode a little bit was you needed, like, a manager.
You needed to get gigs.
To, like, get, like, popping gigs. Now, obviously, when the 80s comes around, this kind of changes slowly.
This is the thing that punk actually changed, yeah.
But I was reading old MRRs because I wanted to get some info on, like, Nashville, see what I can find from there. And it's funny, I did find an article about this couple. I don't know if they're an actual, like, couple, but, like, two people that were doing, like, management stuff for TSOL and the Dead Kennedys. This is early 82.
Yeah.
And they had a list of all,
like contacts,
contacts and venues that would, like, do like punk shows for like bands that want to tour, and they're talking about like, what do you need to like tour if you're a punk band,
right?
And I thought that, I mean, that was really cool.
And they had a thing for Nashville, didn't
they? They did have a thing for Nashville.
You know what I'm thinking about it now too. The fact that they did have a music scene there, albeit a very super focused one, probably was a detriment because like in a place where there is like nothing going on. And there's stories about this. This is like kind of what, you know, we were watching that Merle Allen interview. Sounds like it's kind of what he did in New Hampshire. I've heard of people doing this in other small towns. If there's nothing going on, you can kind of trick people into letting you play.
Yeah.
Because the thought that there you would be a band but not be just a cover band or whatever they're expecting wouldn't even occur to them. And they don't have anything else going on. So there's a higher likelihood of a bar owner or whoever saying like, I don't know what the fuck this is, but maybe people will buy drinks while they're playing. Whereas in Nashville, I would imagine it was like, all right, I can book this thing that like I don't know if anyone likes and seems kind of weird, let alone if it's like more extreme kind of punk stuff. But even just something relatively whatever, you know, new wave kind of deal. It's like, all right, I could book this and kind of take a gamble on it. Or like guaranteed if I do this cowboy hat shit, like there, it's going to be like the same amount of business I'm expecting.
Yeah, that's a reasonable way to look at it, I think. Cause, and also, you just kind of get lost in all the noise, like the literal noise of, you know, a dozen gigs happening on the same
outrageous.
15 blocks.
That
fucking
just hear, bam, 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 like just
that's
hearing
true,
that all the
true
time.
With all the tourists, I was walking around, I was like, well, which band is the good band? And then I was like, it doesn't fucking matter, all the same
they
shit.
Wouldn't know either.
Yeah, yeah. It's not none
they're
of them.
All good.
Well, they do.
And I say it damn.
The accent in Tennessee, I think Tim and I have discussed this, that is like one of the most outrageous ones.
It is outrageous.
It's different even than other southern accents. It is you do it really good. It's that high-pitched beep, 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 beep.
Like, it's like that banjo kind of talk.
Yeah, it sounds like a banjo. Bang, 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 bang.
You know. But like, because you hear somebody from like Texas or like the Carolinas talking, they don't fucking talk like
Texas,
that.
I get. They talk nice and slow and it. Like, when I think of a southern accent, I actually think of the Texas one, which is interesting because that's not what most people from the South sound like. I think it's
I usually
for whatever
think of,
reason,
like,
that one's in my
Mississippi
mind.
Or Alabama, I think.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
region. Which also, talk about regions that I feel like have not much punk or hardcore in it. Like, really.
Alabama certainly seems like it doesn't.
I mean, Alabama, fucking, yeah, what'd you say, Mississippi? That's definitely one. Fucking South Carolina, too. I feel like I've never heard of, like, anything
There's some stuff from there, but yeah. Should we listen to a song from one of these early bands?
I did identify the first punk record from Nashville, Tennessee. It is a band called Clover Bottom. The single is called Anarchy in Music City. And I believe it's from 1977. It might be 78. I got to fact check that. If you look it up, you could find it. And I think we should listen to that song. I remember thinking it was pretty good and pretty unique sounding. There's definitely, I think we could have some takes on it.
Okay. Let's peep that right now.
Clover Bottom, Anarchy in Music City.
Yeah.
That was the song.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I got to immediately issue a fact check correction myself here. I thought this was from 77 or 78 because it sounds like it should be. No, it is from 1980, the Clover Bottom track. And this is one thing I've observed. It seemed like the punk thing happened in Nashville later in so much as it happened and leaned more on the new wavy kind of side. I can hear a lot of remnants of like rock music in this musically. I mean, the bass player is playing too good for a punk band. And it's got that kind of snotty, like, but so there's like Killed by Death or 77 records that are very snotty in kind of an unhinged way. I guess first example that comes to mind is that Mentally Ill EP, Gacy's Place. Mm-hmm. This is more just like obnoxious, I guess. It's clearly there's lyrics are like funny. It's pretty stupid. It reminded me of there's a record from Cleveland from around the same time by a band called the Baloney Heads called I'm a Drunk. It's a cover of I'm a Boy by The Who, but it's about being drunk all the time. This is kind of a Baloney Heads vibe to me.
Yeah.
I guess. Catchy
real
song.
Baloney
though.
Heads vibe.
Tim, I think, correctly observed that it sounds like that Cherokee Nation song by Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Yeah.
I definitely hear the Nuggets influence in the songwriting. But with a bad late 70s recording. But I like this song overall. I want to listen. And also another correction. I said this was a single. It's an EP. And I will go listen to the rest of the EP because it piqued my interest enough.
There's three other tracks.
Yes. And I would imagine just from my experience with records like this, which is extensive, the other songs are going to be shorter and faster. They would play it safe and put their, like, these kinds of bands would put
the song they wanted to be a hit.
The rockiest song would be the first one.
Yeah.
And now listening to it in our modern day punk rock ears, that song would usually be the weakest one. So if you were making a Killed by Death comp, you wouldn't put that one. Those comps a lot of times will be the second song on one of these EPs or the third one because that's the, like, crazy scary one they did.
Yeah. And this was on a record label called Praxis Records. Or, you know... This wasn't. No, I'm sorry. The next thing we're talking about will be. What label put this out?
That I don't know. Let me.
Could be self-released.
If I remember correctly, I'm about to confirm, but I did look it up. I think it was one of those labels that wasn't really a label. It just put out this record.
Like we created a label to just put this out.
Yeah, many such cases.
Many such a case.
I'm confirming that now.
Oh, here we go. Toolbox. Okay. U.S. punk label run 1980. And guess what? They only have one release.
And it's the one we just listened to, yeah.
Yeah, you know, basically, they put it
classic.
On
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's...
On sale for $300 on Discogs.
Wow.
Rare record.
Jeez.
This is like, I think if you showed, like, a kid this, they'd be like, this is not punk rock. 100
Yeah, they'd be like, this doesn't sound like Wanted.
This doesn't sound like 100 Gex.
This doesn't sound like The Garden.
This doesn't sound like Code Orange Kids or Moz Ball.
There is a show. It's The Garden, JPEG Mafia, Alice Glass, The Addicts.
What?
And
yeah, wait a minute.
Someone else.
So it's the clown show.
It's the clown show. What's literally
is
the clown
ICP
show.
Gonna play? Is Twisted? Is Blaze Your Dead Homie gonna be there?
Oh,
my
if
friend
I could
Seth from Ixus was like. Oh, I wonder. I don't even know what the audience would look like, and it's like, a bunch of literal clowns.
If I could also throw this out there, I don't know why everybody likes that JPEG Mafia guy so much.
I like Peggy.
I've never listened to it.
Is that one of those backpack rap that you don't?
Nah,
like?
I wouldn't even say that. I just think he's not that good. Like I don't think he's as good as everybody wants to play it up as.
I can understand that to
a
degree.
I listen to that his new album with like Danny Brown, and it's just like this is pretty annoying.
I wouldn't listen to that. Listen to some of his other stuff. Well, also, I don't really care for Danny Brown too much. I do like Danny Brown. Don't care for him too much. And like I actually just don't really care to listen to him.
He has a weird voice.
He has a weird voice, but he's interesting. I think the other stuff I've heard from JPEG is really good. So, you know what? Maybe worth a try to listen to his other stuff. But he is more out there than a lot of you.
Oh,
that's why
sure.
I kind of like him, in my opinion. But
what's Alice Glass?
No idea, but probably another clown
probably
band.
Like
JPEG Mafia, not a clown band, but...
But a cornball. Cornball adjacent.
I would say cornball fans, maybe. Clown fans.
Like Death Grips style fans.
Yeah, where it's just like, all right, guys.
Oh, Alice Glass... Down. Was in that was the lady from Crystal Castles.
Oh, sick. Hell yeah.
Great. I bet that show, I can't even imagine how irritated I would be at that thing.
Yeah. So we got that. Cloverbond also appeared on a comp a little bit later called Never in Nashville.
I read an article from a Nashville paper where they were talking about this era. I think Cantrell's the one that bar that Rollins mentioned. That was one of the clubs that would do shows. And around this time, there were a bunch of bands we could not find recordings of. There was one called the Committee for Public Safety that was apparently a hardcore band, but couldn't find any recordings of it. So there was some kind of scene coming together. It sounds like locally it was very close in it, just because if you saw another person who looked like a punk, you would stop to make sure they didn't get beat up by cowboys. But it sounds like a lot of this was like the scene there was more seemingly, and again, people can tell us if we're getting the wrong impression, but based on our research, more centered around like bands from out of town. Other punk bands would go and play there. Like,
yeah.
Obviously we saw Black Flag played there. I think there were a few other examples. X from LA played there.
White Cross, Circle Jerks.
White Cross, yeah, I saw a White Cross tour that they played there. I'm sure bands like Courage and Conformity had played there in the mid-80s.
But not an explosion of local hardcore bands, as far as I can tell, or punk bands of any
Which
kind. But other
kind of makes sense.
I mean, that's a little what Western New York was like. Like, a lot of bands played here, but there are only a couple, like, bands from here. That's what it seems like.
Like, right, I mean, I don't think Buffalo really ever had, like a big 80s hardcore band.
No.
Or Rochester.
Not really. No.
But they would come through.
Yeah.
They would come through. Let's listen to one of the other small bands on this compilation.
So, yeah, the compilation is called Never in Nashville. There's a few bands. There's a band called The Factual. I think Cloverbottom again, No Art, and then this band, USR. I don't know anything about them. But this song, We the People by USR, was the punkiest sounding one on there. I like this one. The other songs are very much in the B-side of a Rodney on the Rock compilation category. You know, weird new wave that isn't quite weird enough or quite catchy enough for me to really care about it. But this is a pretty rocking song, as I recall it. So this is USR, We the People, from the Never in Nashville comp in 1981, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, 1981.
All right, let's check it out.
See you in the papers, inhaling all the vapors. I see you in the factories, hot chair in the company. Running scared in the night, punching cards for the right to be. Looking for the coalition that will save the generation.
that was We the People by USR.
Yes.
From the Never in Nashville compilation on Praxis Records.
Apparently, it appears to be that whatever that band is, that's the only thing they ever did. One of the thoughts I had listened to it is that kind of it reminded me a little bit like if they were trying to rip off DOA, both with the lyrics and the sound. It's not nearly as good as DOA. It's good. It's pretty good, but there's like a lot of like rock music residue, more so than you would expect in punk by this point.
Yeah, in 81, like come on guys, Discharge is either about to or has already put out Why.
Dude, the Germs record happened.
Come on, man.
Literally, I mean, anything. Fucking Black Flag. Brains. Like, come on. Come you on, know, fellas.
Even the DOA shit, I mean, I think I thought of them because they had a little bit of a rock and roll edge, but, like, even they were putting out, like, rawer shit than that, and they're Canadian, and that country on, is man. For babies, as it we've is. Established.
And as some people have wanted to dispute with you.
Yeah. Well,
yes, that lady didn't like it when I said that Canada was mad baby-ish.
Well, no, she was more offended that, like, what? She was like, oh, there's something wrong? Did they cover up the cigarettes in stores?
Yes, it wasn't the cigarette thing. It was that their energy drinks, they have some kind of cap at 150 milligrams of caffeine.
Like which, a baby would need.
Like a baby. Like you would they do.
Like a little baby would
like
need.
Like you would do for babies.
Now, I got to say, in terms of energy drinks, you were drank one, I believe. I had one of those Primes the other day. Good as shit.
Is that the Logan Paul beverage?
That is.
They taste Logan, good. They're tasty.
Logan, you got me, Logan.
Logan, you might suck, but you got good products.
You got good taste in energy drinks.
I'm trying to stick to my Michael Savage beetroot powder as like a pre-workout. It has caffeine, too.
Oh, really? Nice.
It's not the same brand that he would advertise, but I remember that from that great conservative talk radio show. Super Beats. Blood flow, blood flow, blood flow. You know what that means.
Yeah,
the implication
Savage,
being your dick will get
very,
hard.
Very punk rock icon.
Known punk rock icon, Michael Savage.
Now, in terms
and Nashville
of...
Nashville resident, clearly.
80s kind of stuff, early 80s stuff. I wasn't able to find too much.
Right. Seems like there was a bit of a...
A glut?
It didn't
or
start...
Not, what, not a glut. What's the opposite of glut?
A dearth.
A dearth. There was a dearth of bands.
It didn't really pick up till like the late 80s.
And at this time, you know, maybe there was bands, but it's very hard for us to find. So again, one of those... If you know any, please send them our way.
Couldn't find recordings.
I'm sure people on Twitter will tell me otherwise.
We could really barely find anything. And if I were to seek an explanation, it really would be the matter of like... not having places to play. I mean, my God, probably even, you know, some places they'd get VFW halls or whatever. There's probably fucking country music getting booked there, too. Like it,
right, from like the smaller guys who do country stuff.
Yeah.
Now, here is a very interesting fact that I found that does relate to Nashville in terms of hardcore. You know the Flex Your Head compilation?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know the artwork that comes with it, the two different covers?
Yeah, there's the bad one with the piano. Or violin, and there's the triple X's.
No, the other one has the corn.
The grain, excuse me, yeah.
That comes from stock covers from a gospel recording plant, pressing plant, based in Nashville.
That's interesting.
So those were stock covers that they just, I don't know if they just sent with them or if whatever, but... Interesting how that worked out.
I know gospel music, I would be remiss to not mention, that is a big part of the music. That's actually the Music City thing, that term, Net Music City USA, that is reported to have come from, there was a all-black singing group whose name I can't remember, blanking on it, but they were really successful. This was like pre-Civil War even, and they went and sang, I think, probably religious-based songs for Queen Victoria. And she said, think about this. This is such a thing you would expect, like, a stupid-ass queen to say. She's like, you must have come from Music City. That was wonderful.
Wow.
And that was it. But I did not know that. That's funny that they just got things from a stock covers collection. That's we should do stuff like that.
Yeah, just get some random shit.
Yeah.
Now, what I was able to find is from an October issue of Maximum Rock and Roll 1986. If you don't know, those that don't know, Maximum Rock and Roll did the scene reports every, I don't know if every issue, every now and then they would do various different, people would submit them for your various scenes. I do like reading them. They are fun to read. And this one was pretty informative because I was able to find quite a bit. The person mentioned four bands that they quoted as like kind of more cut and dry hardcore bands. That was PMS, 3TBL, DIA, and F Particles.
F Particles sounds familiar. You said you couldn't find any music from
any
of those
bands,
right?
Could not find much. Now, again, I didn't spend all day trying to figure that out. When you look up on Discogs DIA, it comes up with 2,000 different artists, and it's like, well, I'm not going to page 15.
That's no good.
To try and find this fucking band that maybe had like a 7-inch or something like that. Who knows?
I will say, for during the 80s, the whole like, acronym thing,
yeah,
like very overplayed. It's like,
dude,
come on, guys, let's get a little bit
and
more creative.
That like came back in the early 2000s.
There's a lot, and there's like a lot in Nashville, it seems.
Well, what was your 3TBL?
3TBL.
Like, what the fuck is that?
What am I supposed to find with that shit? But also, they mentioned several other bands. Gimp and the Crips, Johnny Panic, Shadow 15, Boy Scouts, Tommy Rot, and Scrotum Dogs.
Scrotum Dogs.
So this was... There was a decent amount of bands, it seems like. Then the person was kind of stoked on all of these bands to a degree.
I did.
Except that one band.
What?
What, the Boy Scouts or something?
No, maybe I think Tommy Rot, maybe.
Right, because they were like, he said something like they were trying to be like all like progressive rock or something. And he was
did
like,
did
they
say anything about F Particles? Because I found an F Particles music video that we can check out.
I don't even know if it's saying, because I found a live video of them, but it did not sound like punk or hardcore in the slightest. And I was like, I have no idea. So we might pause and check this out. I just couldn't find a single like actual piece of music.
Whatever I found appears to be like a studio recording with live footage.
What is the song called?
9-8 Equation.
9-8 Equation?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't we play 9-8 Equation by F Particles and make a determination if
this is
the
only
band
name that I thought I recognized.
Same here.
Yeah, this sounds
familiar. I don't know if I was just not typing in something right, because I was doing F dash particles, F space particles. I couldn't find anything on Discogs. Let's listen to this song.
Yeah, go to the first one.
Life is war. War is hell. Life is hell.
Subscribe.
All right. So that was F Particles 9-8 Equation.
Yes.
So it seems that's the band that we're talking about.
Yeah. No, it does. We can't find anything about them anywhere.
They're not on Discogs.
Nope.
I'm going to try and maybe contact the person to upload the video, because they have two or three videos about this band. There's like another video song that we watched that seems like kind of like almost cock rocky in a way.
Or poppy, almost like
something at not the, hardcore.
It was between college rock and cock rock. It reminded me of like the last Channel 3 LP, The Last Time I Drank, but not nearly
God.
As good. No, that record rules. What we just heard is like a worse version of that. Really, this, so there's a lot of unanswered questions regarding this F Particles thing we found on YouTube. I think the main question on my mind is, do you guys think Black Flag might have played Nashville at some point? Something about the way this sounded makes me kind of suspect that might have happened.
You know, maybe once or twice at least. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because we found another prior
one
two. Where he talked.
And this band clearly either started after that happened or possibly they were already playing some kind of boring rock music.
But then they heard Black Flag.
And they were like, oh, that guy rips at the guitar.
Man, we got to get that guy Craig Ginn.
We got to get that guy Craig to play like Craig.
Let's just rip off Craig Ginn.
You got to play like Craig from that punker band that came through here.
And then they were like, let's do a music video. And they're like, yeah.
Wait, shouldn't we maybe record something for like a 7-inch first?
Should we do like a B-side for a 7-inch?
No.
Nope. Guess not. And like, as you know what? Like I said, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we don't understand. Maybe we're missing something. Maybe this is part of something else. Maybe they're on a comp or something like that we can't find.
Maybe this is all just one big psyop.
Yeah,
we're being
also
fooled right now.
But it's just so bizarre that a band would put out a music video but not put out a 7-inch or a demo or
anything. The music video, my theory on that is whoever uploaded this to YouTube made that video themselves.
Yeah.
Clearly they did. That is not like a music video that was made in the 80s.
You know what?
Yeah.
Could that be like a college band.
I bet. And it's either their friend or someone in the band who had this demo recording or something and a bunch of video footage and pieced this together to upload on the new website, YouTube. So that
16 years ago. That's when it set it up.
Yeah, so 400 people could watch it.
I got this video. You know what? Hey, Secret Man, send it to Southern Lord. They'll repress it as a 12-inch.
Yes.
With one song.
As a 19-inch vinyl with,
with the other side as a DVD. Can put it into you can put it into your computer disk drive.
19-inch vinyl is a really funny image.
Right now, that'd be
leading
like
over the
everyone's
the
talking about
player.
Everyone wants smaller vinyl. We got the 5-inch. We got.
I
the
want
four
bigger.
Inch. I'm going bigger, folks.
I always learned bigger was better. It's gonna be a 19-inch record.
It's 19-inch.
It's plenty of music.
It doesn't fit on your record shelf. You gotta buy a deluxe record shelf, folks.
You could hang it on your wall. You could put it wherever, but you're going to need 19 inches of space.
I actually just checked my phone, and Southern Lord did actually just sign this group.
Wow. With the one song.
Yeah.
What song? Yeah,
like
music
40th
video.
Anniversary edition.
It was good. I liked it. I mean, I like Blast, that was cool. So I liked this.
But, really couldn't find much about this era of hardcore.
Yeah.
It seems to be not very well documented, which, again, based upon what had been happening even a few years prior, kind of makes sense.
Yes, this is like the hardcore scene is just starting to sound like a hardcore scene there. I think the first real solid document we found of the scene in Nashville, the hardcore scene, was courtesy of the illustrious Mystic Records run by Mr.
And
Doug Moody.
Friend of the podcast, Doug Moody.
Friend of the pod, Doug Moody. Is he alive still?
I wouldn't be surprised if he's not.
Or if he changed his name and ran away from all the people he ripped off. I don't have a lot of Moody details.
I'm Mug Duty.
There's a seems to be a very broad consensus that he was a huge scumbag. But he put out a
cool
lot of music,
dude,
including a bunch of music I like.
I do think it is interesting how he was like a fucking music industry guy. And then like all the shit he puts out is like, it's like, you know, metal tinged like punk music.
He was probably just like, oh, this is like fish in a barrel. They don't know anything. And granted, the records aren't going to sell as good as mainstream rock music. So like the revenue is smaller, but the margins are going to be even higher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow, man, this guy, that Doug Moody guy, he's got some crazy fucking. His dad, Walter Moody, was himself an influential figure in the music industry, running EMI Studios, Abbey Road Studios in London during the 1930s.
Jeez. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's wild.
So this guy was literally just like, okay, I'm going to.
He's like Illuminati, yeah.
But he decided to shoot the fish in the barrel instead of chasing any big fish.
Yeah. Well, good for him. I'm glad he did.
I don't blame him.
Kind of reminds me of what's his face, the third?
Hank Williams the third.
Hank Williams the third.
Yeah.
You know, probably could have gone.
Hey, he's from Nashville.
Probably could have gone the traditional way, but kind of decided not to. But there's a couple bands that were from this era. There was another Scene Report, and specifically there was a compilation that we discovered.
Oh yeah, the Opry Outlaws.
Yes,
but, that, or Opry Outcasts.
That's right. Not Outlaws, because that's like country.
Yeah. Opry Outcasts again on Mystic Records as part of their Super 7 series that they did in the mid to late 80s of just 7-inch compilations, usually regionally based, although not always. They put out a lot of those 7-inch comps.
I believe they refer to it as the Mystic Sampler.
Mystic Samplers, yes. Yeah. They cranked out a lot of these things.
Now, they're in the scene report in 89, I believe, in June of 89. It mentions quite a few bands, including Intruder, which is like a speed metal band. Not really punk, but again, underground music that eventually they were signed to Metal Blade.
Which year was this again? What was this
89.
89, okay.
June of 89 issue. They mentioned a band, Rednecks of Pain, which I believe is on the...
They're the first band on that Opry Outcast 7.
And a band called FUCT. It's like a crossover band.
Yep.
So these are the three big bands that are kind of like really popping off. They also mentioned a few other bands. Notary Public, Spellbinder, Social Disease, Caustic Solutions, and Children Shouldn't Die.
I agree, they shouldn't.
They really shouldn't. Now, we're going to focus, again, mostly on this Opry Outcasts comp, because a few of those bands are on here. Caustic Solutions and Rednecks in Pain are on.
They both were Rednecks. We listened to the whole thing. Rednecks in Pain had, like, a slam part. That was cool. There is one band on it. I'm going to look at the track list, because the last one was the one that was sort of a standout to me, and I'm curious
word
if they mentioned
something.
Word Uprising. Yeah, their stuff was very cool. I liked that song a lot.
The Caustic Solutions song I thought that was pretty cool too, because it's like in that weird, like, it's like thrash death metal.
So yeah, the ones on here were Rednecks in Pain, Mayday, Caustic Solution, and Word Uprising are the four on that Doug Moody Productions comp. Yeah, it doesn't even say Mystic Records, because
was Super 7 Records.
Yeah. But it's the same shit.
Same wheelhouse.
Great 7-inch picture sleeve, by the way. If you want an example of design that I like, this would be a good one to look at.
It is kind of weird, too, how, like, you know, we're talking about, like, how this seems like a place where it doesn't have, like, much of a following. Mm-hmm. But then this Doug Moody guy, he got his nose into the music scene out there and was like, oh, I could do something with this.
Yeah, I think around this time is when things kind of are really kind of on the up and up. There's a couple other scene reports from, like, there's like one from 90, I think, and also a Knoxville one from 89 or 90, where they're saying good things. They're just like, the big thing that with them is like, we want bigger bands to come through. You know, it's like we've had, you know, I forgot exactly. I know like Neurosis came through and... Crows of Conformity, like 88 or something like that. So it's like when bigger bands come through, people will show out. Obviously, it's one of those things where, because there probably isn't like a known scene there, that back in the day, convincing someone to even come go there was kind of like, you had to kind of like...
Ugh. Well, plus it really is, you know, probably off the beaten trail, really. You know, going out of your way to play, like, you know, Nashville or Knoxville.
Because like nowadays it's totally reasonable, I think, to a degree, because again, you have Atlanta, you have Memphis,
you got
Knoxville,
Raleigh,
you have
Kentucky,
Lay of Lexington and stuff like that above. You have Little Rock.
Oh, Arkansas. Yeah, yeah.
You have like scenes that I think now, especially in 2023, have like followings to a degree. Hattiesburg in Mississippi is near there, which a lot of poppin' bands from
MS
there.
MS Paint.
There are now, yeah.
So, back then, I can imagine it was a little more tough.
Well, I think there were, like, bands coming through. It just wasn't that... There weren't necessarily, like, hardcore scenes.
Yeah,
in those
of course.
Places. There was music scenes, and there was, like, other... It was definitely not just, like, country music there by the late 80s, but hardcore hadn't become, like, a thing there like it was in, to use an extreme example, in New York City, you know, or even in Boston or something like that.
It's not a household name like it is nowadays. Mm-hmm.
Should we, what are these, which one of these bands should we listen to?
I like the Word Uprising. We should play that one.
Yeah, okay. This was the weirdest one. The other ones, they're all kind of weird. They're all very of the time. The tracks, you can hear both the crossover, like, thrash/groove influence, as well as maybe due to production values, there's some, like, proto-grungy sounds. Word Uprising had a little more of a, like, post-post-punk sound, as I recall it.
I think that Mayday band, they also had some like kind of Red Hot Chili Peppers style like bass playing going on.
This was a good comp, but yeah, if you're down, let's listen to that Word Uprising track. This is from the Opry Outcast, the Nashville compilation on Super 7 Records, and the song is called...
People.
What's it called?
People.
People, just called People.
Ready's ready.
Okay, so I misremembered that drastically. I said it had like post-punk influence. I think I just said that because there's clean minor chords on it. And I forget that that was like something thrash metal bands did too. It is a weird metal song.
I mean, I wouldn't even say it's a metal song. I would say this is like
metal-tinged.
So very much what like this era of hardcore is like infested with.
Yes.
And I wouldn't say infested in a bad way, but like
it could also just be the recording as well.
No, I don't even. It's like I'm saying like 88 to like 92 is like a bad era of hardcore in general, because there's so much like stuff where people just don't know what the fuck. It's not that they don't know what they're doing, but like the scene doesn't kind of know how to progress necessarily.
Yes,
in a lot of places.
It's kind of endearing sometimes. Like I like this song, but it does. Whether or not they thought they knew what they were doing, it comes off like they don't know what kind of music they're trying to make.
Yeah, it's like
kind
I kind of
like it
that
for that reason, but
it has like a college rock kind of laid backness to it.
I think that's a lot of that has to do with production, but also the vocals and stuff too.
Yeah, like they don't know how to do the vocals correctly or like.
But
like
then they get like the chugging guitars on it too.
Yeah,
but then
like,
they got that weird. There was that weird passage where like they're doing like solos and it's kind of like more upbeat.
Right, it's
like
kind of groovy.
Yeah, so it's just like what is?
It's kind of like they got permission to do a bunch of different things from different places. So it's like okay, we're allowed to play metal now because of crossover. But also, I don't have to do Rob Halford vocals anymore because I've heard The Replacements.
Yeah.
But also, we can make it faster because of hardcore. Those things all sound pretty fun. Let's just do all of it, and
yeah,
we'll
like throwing an REM part.
Yep,
I will say
we'll just give our band a weird name that doesn't make any sense, like Word Uprising.
And Demolition, friends in Demolition just did a 3-part series on Nemesis Records, and that has that like Chorus of Disapproval, I think, is on there.
Yes,
and there is a bunch of stuff that is similarly in that vein, and. This makes sense. Again, this is 1990. It kind of makes sense. This came out. Gray is listening, I would like to know what he thinks of this compilation. Probably should listen to it.
He should. I mean, it's Mystic. It's on Mystic.
It's on Mystic. It's kind of Mystic, you know.
But it's 1990, so it doesn't sound like fucking ill repute. It sounds like, the Nemesis shit you're talking about.
Yeah. Interesting stuff, you know. But, like, that Rednecks in Pain, it kind of has, like, that, like, heavy, hardcore-y thrash kind of
had
yeah.
like a slam part on it almost.
And then right like
second.
Mayday, right, they were like doing some like a little bit of like that like funk thrash kind of thing. And then what's the other something Caustic
Solutions.
Yeah, that was the most like straightforward crossover one as I recall it.
I mean, I would even that had like a little bit of death metal influence too.
Again, that amorphous time when like genres weren't so set in stone.
Yeah. Yeah, like and yeah, exactly.
And this is, like, especially the late 80s, like, people don't think about it. But, like, I was talking to you guys about how in one of the scene reports they were talking about, like, bands coming through. And one of the bands mentioned was Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Mm-hmm.
Which Red Hot Chili Peppers and punk and hardcore underground music in 2023 is, like...
Can't forget, though, this is before Blood Sugar Sex Magic. So.
Much, much before that. Well, that was, like, early 90s, right? Like, 94?
That was, like, 91, 92.
Oh, 92, okay.
Yeah, they were very much, as I understand, a band that sat at the intersection of, like, hardcore and college rock. I mean, college rock, that's not a real genre term. That's I hate that I'm using it. They were a punk band that would have gotten play on college radio more so than, like... I don't know, Septic Death probably would have.
And people really liked them, too, I think.
People in the punk, like, they talk about them a lot in Maximum Rock and Roll. It is surprisingly brought up more than you absolutely would ever think.
We'll have to review their early stuff. I've never listened to it.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. So,
like,
I mean,
cut off at
a
Mother's Milk or something?
Flea was in fucking Fear.
And
he was.
And the good movie Suburbia.
Yeah, so...
He's got his punk credentials. He does.
Gotta give it the unfortunately gotta hand it to Flea.
Anthony Kiedis, he was on Epstein's Island, so
yeah, very not punk. I will say Epstein's Island not punk. Suburbia punk.
So this compilation, I sort of conclude regarding this period of time. This was before 90s hardcore was invented in Troy, New York, basically.
Correct.
Yeah,
and then
there is one other group I think that we should acknowledge.
There's a couple. I would say post this era.
Yes. Yeah. Moving on.
I think what you're going to bring up.
Yeah. From Ashes Rise is originally from Nashville.
I have not listened to them in a long time, but I remember really liking them. What's their like early output? What's they got like a seminal particular 7-inch we should examine.
Let me see here.
I was listening
I
to one
say,
earlier that was
they're like a crust band.
That Opry Outcasts 7-inch is going for $4.99 on Discogs.
$4.99?
Yes.
I mean, it's a bunch of bands that no one's ever heard of. But you know what? I just looked at other things on Discogs that nobody's ever heard of, and they're like $1,500. So,
yeah.
But this is an era, like, look, if you're like an obscure, weird punk-adjacent band from the late 70s, your record might have been on one of those KBD comps and gotten really expensive. This era is not an era that produced a lot of, like, cult classics, I don't think. Not in the same way. Because it's not, it's to your point regarding this era of music, like, it's hard to fit this style of stuff into your, like, highly curated identity that you have for yourself and what you're into.
Yeah, let's, I think, listen to something from their first, from Ashes Rise. We're going to listen to something from their first 7-inch.
Well, how about Concrete and Steel? That's a good song.
And what and year
steel?
Is this?
Wait, what is that from?
Oh, that's from the self-titled album.
Do you want to listen to something like that?
Yeah, that's a good. I feel like that's pretty good.
Yeah, what year is it?
2000. Bit of a jump.
Sure. Yeah, there's a big jump. I mean, because 90s hardcore is hard.
Their first 7-inch comes out in 98, so that's still in.
Let's maybe see what's good with that then.
The first 7-inch?
Fragments of a Fallen Sky.
Sure. Let's listen to some of the early shit. I mean, because 90s hardcore is a blind spot for me a little bit. For all of us, maybe.
I feel like that's for, like, a lot of people.
Yeah, it's tough. This episode especially, we are soliciting information from people because we want to learn more about this ourselves. We tried to get all the info we can. But also, after the 90s, like, and into the 2000s, like, you know, the purpose of this City to City series is sort of a regional examination of subculture and punk. And that regionalism has sadly faded since the 90s as everything becomes more interconnected, and it's kind of the same stuff everywhere, but with slight differences and differences of degree more than anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's listen to a song. I'll figure out a song from the first 7-inch, Fragments of a Fallen Sky, from Ashes Rise. Ooh, that's kind of hard to say. All right, that was Haunted Conscience from Fragments of a Fallen Sky, the 7-inch from Ashes Rise.
From 98. Different than I remembered. I think I must have listened to the album you were talking about, Tim, because I remember this band being a little bit more polished, catchy, I guess what people would call arena crust. This reminds me of a little bit of neighboring His Hero Is Gone from Memphis,
yeah,
but with a little more metal edge, I guess, or 90s hardcore edge.
So the one thing I would say that people always kind of seem to miss about His Who Is Gone is the influence that, like, Screamo has.
Yes, I hear that in this a little bit, too.
And it kind of, in, like, how chaotic. I wouldn't say Screamo, but, like, how chaotic it sounds.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially that ending part.
You just made sense for me. I think the reason I like Tragedy more than a lot of this stuff is because they got rid of that and replaced it with arena rock.
Just hardcore,
yeah,
also.
Yes.
That's what they said, because apparently our friends at Demolition also did an episode series on The Great American State Religion, which that first record came out, the self-title came out on, that Tim mentioned. And that is run by one of the dudes from His Who Is Gone, who is also in Tragedy, and does a lot of stuff like that. So I think it all kind of makes sense how they eventually develop, you know, and His Who Is Gone and From Ashes Rise and Tragedy are kind of, like, again, in that same wheelhouse. This is cool stuff, though.
Yeah, it's got the cool kind of guitar harmonies I would associate with that kind of modern crust stuff. It also even has some blast beat parts. A little bit of a disjointed song structure, which probably is that chaotic screamo influence you're talking about. But cool, you can hear the promise of the band in this, certainly. I I'm not an expert on the scene in Nashville or generally during this time period, but this is certainly became a very popular band and probably a pretty influential one.
Yeah, for sure. Especially since, yeah, with them and Tragedy kind of going on at the same time.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, this is when, like, Crust was, like, becoming a thing. Like, Profane Existence and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah.
So.
They were probably awful Crusties in Nashville. I don't even want to think about what those people.
Oh, God.
I don't even want to think about that park I was in and the people who have.
Think of all the used needles that have been.
Yeah.
Well, that, I think we covered it a lot.
We did. With this. We did. We will probably, if you're amicable to it, leave you. We're not going to comment on it, but maybe we'll throw a gun track on the end just so people can know where
we are
this,
now.
This scene is now. But if you have other information about this scene, you know, we always want to learn more, and we appreciate it. We are very, very fortunate that our listener base includes a lot of very knowledgeable people and even people who are maybe a little older and experienced things we weren't around for, and they're always very generous with sharing tidbits of info with us, and we really, really, really appreciate it. So feel free, you know, drop that knowledge if you know about Nashville, but we'll be doing more of these city-to-city things where we examine weird places that we think suck but might have cool things in them.
Hey, I think we gave Nashville a fair enough shake. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Surely, yeah.
Like I said, the only downside of the city is that, like, it seems that in that middle era, didn't seem to be very well documented.
You know, I guess it makes sense. You know, it's like the mid-80s. Like, there's a bunch of, you know, probably young people. They probably aren't, you know, they're not thinking of, like, the posterity, right? You know, be like, we gotta document this for future generations.
Yeah.
No, especially if they left after college. But
Now it's all like, oh, dude, my new band has a demo. It's got a flag to, what is it called?
A banner
already.
And we're signed to Warner Brothers, baby.
We've got 15 shirt designs, and in 3 months, we're going to play our first show to a fest.
In New York
City.
Yeah.
It's like,
we're going to all meet each other for the first time when we play this show.
Right. It's like, how do bands do that? How does that happen?
How did it get so virtual, Tim?
Well, I feel like these people have some deep pockets. Real deep pockets.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is funny because you always had to have kind of money to be in a band if you think about it.
Not only money, but connections.
That's true.
Connections for sure. Now, it really does just seem like, oh, if you throw enough money down.
Oh, it's way more valuable because, like, it would cost us more money to record at some shitty recording studio in Rochester or even with our friends versus just recording on the computer with strangers. That would, in fact, be cheaper, but it's finding the strangers and finding people to say that the crap you made with them was good. That's the trickier thing.
Right, you got to fool people.
Now you can just hop into the virtual reality chat, you know.
You're like, hey, we got cool artwork for our demo.
You could like, hey, look, I see a punk. You see a punk rocker with a studded jacket, you know, and you just go up to him, and there you go. You got a virtual band that can now headline in New York City.
That's why Meta failed Zuckerberg's VR thing, is I heard the butt flaps weren't functional.
Yeah, they
a big problem.
A disclosed patch was going to be in the next update, kind of.
But they had to pixelate a little bit. They didn't get the copyright for that.
They couldn't let it say raw D-beat punk.
Yeah, I'd be like, Zuckerberg, well, that's under copyright from Kawakami.
Zuckerberg is going through a $1 billion lawsuit filed against him by the lower class brats, and I think it's probably going to bring him down.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, let us know what cities we want to do. You might want to hear us next.
Yeah, how about a Salt Lake City, Utah? That'd
something
probably be another
like,
weird one.
Oh, actually, that might be more fruitful than we think.
I think
you
so.
Know?
I mean, I would just always think it's like, oh, you know, it's a shitty town from some shit state.
Remember that band we played with, though? It was awesome. They were like, we lost everything.
We need to borrow every single piece of your gear.
We need to literally borrow everything.
That doesn't narrow it down.
But they
much.
Also did. They looked like they were straight up from like SLC Punk.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
So cool. That's cool when really, you do that. But thanks for listening, everybody. Cop Pod Official on Instagram, kingsofpunk.com, and Kings of Punk Pod on Twitter if you want to argue with Tyler about stuff.
Tell me what other bands were literal boy bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Please.
Come fucking argue with us about the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, I mean,
Let's do it.
Yeah, how about a Ramones? I'd like to hear somebody argue that.
Oh, don't get me started. Well, you know what? I think they should, because if you're going to say that about the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, you might as well.
Like, the Ramones were literally, without having a manager tell them to do so, independently trying to be the Bay City Rollers. So, I guess pick your poison.
Actually, yeah, now that you say that, man.
They had a uniform, like, and they gave the same name. Like, no, they were explicitly.
They were brothers.
Johnny said, like, yeah, we wanted to be like the Bay City Rollers. So, I don't know. Come at them too, I guess.
Well, no, they won't, because they're cool.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Well, no,
they got the
no.
from all the younger generation, but not the Sex Pistols.
Don't worry. People have come for the head of the Ramones, specifically and really
Johnny
Ramone.
That's really funny.
They're like, they're not punk rock because he was a shitty dude. And it's like, well, what about literally everyone else in the fucking
band? What about
band?
Like literally every punk band on earth? I mean, how do you explain that then?
Also, again, it's like, hey, man, music is not that's not all about politics. I'm sorry, but like you can write a sick song, and like
that is funny that these kids think that, you know, like music is gonna like change anything.
I mean, to be fair, it's not limited to kids. Like, people thought that in the 60s too, and all the punk bands we liked also thought that. People just keep thinking that.
Yeah, and then it's just with every time it's like, well, I better be ready to be disappointed.
Oh, there was a very funny person on Twitter who was just like, I'm just finding out about John Chang from Gridlink and Discordance Axis, and I cannot handle it. And it's like,
for what?
Because he's like a libertarian weirdo who's like all about American imperialism
and
stuff like that.
And stealing Seth Putnam's ideas, the new book by John Chang.
Yeah, the classic. So, and it's just like, man, why do you think of... Helpful tip, and then we'll wrap this up. Don't think of any musician as anything other than a person who just happened to be able to write a cool
sequence. Like, they probably worked at a gas station at some point. Now they maybe don't.
Yeah, they are no different than you. Actually, it's funny because I just watched the TV series from Amazon called Swarm, where it kind of centers around a person who is obsessed with a singer on some Stan. Swifty kind of level, you know, Beyonce B kind of level. And it is just like, man, people do think like this, and they are deranged. I mean, they're not a murderer, but
they are Grateful Dead fans.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that might be worse than being a murderer, honestly.
So don't listen to Grateful Dead except for that one awesome song, and have
Touch
a good
gray,
weekend.
Right?
Yeah. Have a good weekend.